Good morning. It's May 26th in downtown Sandpoint, Idaho. It's not raining, and you're listening to the KRFY Morning Show with myself, not-so-lonesome Jack, and across from me is guest host Carrie Logan.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here again, Carrie.
Thank you for having me. I like it.
Also in the studio, our guests will be later on in the show, Ray Charlton, the president of the Kinnikinick Native Plant Society, and Bob Wilson, who wears several hats, but including the chairman of the upcoming plant sale and of the Sandpoint Tree Committee. But first, before we start that conversation, let's talk a little bit about the weather. Not currently raining, as I said. We can tell by just looking into that skylight above our heads. But it does look like later on today we will have some isolated showers after 11 a.m. Otherwise, partly sunny with a high near 67 degrees. Not too windy, but a south wind 5 to 8 miles an hour. And tonight, the low is going to be down around 44 degrees with a slight chance of showers after 11 p.m., 20% chance. Mostly cloudy with a low around 44. I guess I said that already. Southwest wind 6 to 9 miles an hour. On Friday, chance of showers and is about 40%, then mostly cloudy tomorrow with a high near 57 degrees. The new rainfall amount is less than a tenth of an inch, except there is a chance of some thunderstorms coming through, in which case that will be a little bit higher. Saturday, looking ahead to the weekend, 50% chance of showers on Saturday with a high up near 60 degrees. Sunday, 50% chance of showers with a high near 62. And then on Memorial Day, again, 50% chance of showers and a high near 65. Boy, I guess today is kind of the pick of the weekend. So get out there and enjoy this beautiful weather this morning while you can. And then after 11 a.m., it doesn't look like it's going to be great. But that's okay.
Yeah, we need the rain.
We certainly do. Yeah,
good for the plants.
We will be thanking Mother Nature later in the year for a rainy Memorial Day weekend if it turns out that way. But who knows? This stuff is all changes so fast. Anyway, tomorrow I'll read the weather and it'll be totally different.
Memorial Day weekend at the laundromat is always interesting because people come in who have been camping. Mm-hmm. They bring their wet tents and their wet sleeping bags and their wet everything, you know.
Yes.
Crying out.
I've been that guy before. at a laundromat in a strange town, just kind of shivering and trying to dry myself out. Let's talk about some other stuff that's going on outside besides the weather, although maybe it is weather related. The upcoming plant sale. Ray and Bob, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
What is this upcoming event and when and where?
Okay. Well, first of all, I want to thank you for having us here in the Tiki Room.
Indeed.
We have an event coming up that has several components to it and a lot of things, little something for everyone, I think. It's sort of a combined Arbor Day and Native Plant Sale event, and this will be our fourth year with this kind of format. It's on June 4th. And it's going to be held over in Lakeview Park, right beside the historical museum. And we're going to start the day off with the Arbor Day ceremony. This is the day that Sandpoint celebrates Arbor Day, which is one of the requirements for Sandpoint to be a Tree City USA. And I think we're up to about 18 years on that.
I was going to say, we've been one for a long time, haven't we?
Yeah. So it's quite a commitment that the city of Sandpoint has made to honoring and caring for the trees in the city. I should say I am here partly as the chair of the Sandpoint Tree Committee, which is a citizens advisory committee, which helps the city plan policy and programs about the care of the city's trees. And this is an important, the Arbor Day event is an important event in promoting what we're doing, I think, to the rest of the community. We will have, there's a tree going to be planted, not that day, it'll be in the ground by the time we get there, but we're planting a tulip tree, a tulip poplar there in Lakeview Park. There are not very many in town, so we're adding one more. And there will be also a little ceremony. The mayor will read a proclamation, and there will be the awarding of the Tree City USA banner by, we'll have a representative there from the Idaho State Department of Lands. So that's going to kick off the whole day's event.
So that's 9 o'clock.
Yes, thank you, Ray. That all starts at 9 o'clock.
On June the 4th.
On June weekend. The 4th.
Saturday, June 4th.
Yeah.
And it's also a free Saturday at the Historical Museum. I believe they open it, or History Museum. They open at 10, I think. But people certainly could do both events very comfortably. Park once, do both.
Make it a day. Yeah. On June 4th at Lakeview Park. Tree City USA, briefly. I think I've asked about it last time you were in here. But who's in charge of that, and what does it mean?
That is a program run by the National Arbor Day Foundation. And it's just something that the city can do to say, we value the trees. The trees are an important part of our community. There's several requirements that they have to do to get that. And one I mentioned is celebrating the Arbor Day, having an official ceremony. They also have to have a tree committee, which they have had for a good number of years. And they also have to have a minimum spending amounts on the urban forestry program.
And it's a ratio per capita or something
per,
like that.
Yeah, I forget what the number is, but it's a per person,
right.
Yeah, per citizen. Right. Spending, but yeah. We're well over the minimum on that.
I think we spend about $40,000 a year on trees, including, well, in the budget, it kind of looks that way because you factor out some of city staff's salaries for administration of the program.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What's a tulip poplar? Tulips grow from the ground. In my
I was waiting for that question.
It's a fairly large tree. Will get eventually 50 feet or more tall, with a pretty good sized trunk on it. Has a very distinctive leaf, which I can't really describe adequately over the radio. But it does have a flower that is somewhat reminiscent of a tulip, kind of a greenish yellow, fairly sizable flower when it blooms. And that's where it gets the name tulip.
And it will be the first of those in the Arboretum, won't it? Do we have now?
Yeah, it'll be in Lakeview Park, not in the Arboretum proper.
Okay, outside the, all right.
Because it's not a native tree to our area.
Well, that's what I wondered. Yes. Okay, but it's a wonderful addition to the park.
Yeah, it'll be a nice thing to have in the park there.
Oh. Is it related to magnolias at all?
I think it is. I think it might be in the same family or group of families.
You're thinking blossom. Tulip. I was thinking that,
The tulip tree, I call them tulip trees. They remind me of a magnolia blossom, kind of.
They definitely have some similarities. However, yeah. Could be.
Have those stopped blooming, by the way? I saw those. There's a couple around town that I saw on my walk.
Big one on Division.
Yeah. I thought it was fantastic. Mm-hmm. But they kind of come and go, don't they? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You don't see them all summer long anyway.
You have to put a little bulletin on the city website. You know, it's blooming if you want to go see it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's one over here in front of Keoki's.
On Church?
Church Street, yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And this, the native plants sale, no, it's not, the plant sale on Arbor Day goes to benefit what?
It is a native plant sale, and it goes to benefit the Kinnikinnick Native Plant Society.
It is, and it's all native plants that you're selling to.
Yes.
Yes. He has a nursery, a wonderful nursery. We depend on him for it, and they bring plants.
I see. And why would a person want to support the Kinnikinnick Native Plant Society, I wonder?
We are such a good organization. I'll be happy to answer that, but I want to tack on something about the ceremony, because we've already started on that.
Sure.
He mentioned the proclamation in the Tree City, and usually that's the entire ceremony, but this year is different. We have an information kiosk in the Arboretum, very near the little homesteader's cabin, visible from the path that goes to the museum. It was installed last year. Maintenance at the Arboretum is an all-volunteer effort. Our members do it. And one of our members, Ken Haig, built the information kiosk. And on the front, it has a map of the various habitats in the Arboretum and information. And the back was blank. Our Arboretum manager, Sylvia, said, you know, it would be nice to have a mural, a painting here on the back. And we asked, she wisely asked Marilyn McIntyre, longtime member, wonderful artist, to paint a mural. It is 4 by 6 feet. It will be installed on Friday and unveiled Saturday morning. And she had to choose which of the myriad plants that flourish, native plants, to put in it. And while she was working along, she thought, I want to put something in this to intrigue children and their wonderful curiosity. So she started adding critters. She has hidden some of them, but some of them are there. They'll say, oh, there's a little bird. I wonder what bird that is. So she's dedicating it to the children of Bonner County. It is a permanent installation. It will be protected by plexiglass. And I look forward to everybody seeing this beautiful mural. It is a very special addition to our Arboretum.
That's totally cool.
It is. And I think of Arbor Day as open house for the Arboretum. It's looking very nice. Another thing we do in conjunction with Arbor Day is we have tours for school children in the area led by a number of us who volunteer there. And this year we're doing third graders, and we have them coming at appointed times on several days throughout the week. Introducing them to the concept of trees and what trees are happy and what habitats. We've been doing that for years as well. That's a nice part of Arbor Day.
Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure.
How long has the Native Plant Society been around?
We will be 20 years old next year.
Hmm. Was the Arboretum always native plants? Or
yes.
Yeah.
It was the dream of our founder, Lois Wythe.
Oh, I was going to ask you if Lois was involved in
the
founding.
Lois is the visionary, absolute visionary who brought us to where we are now. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I see. This is, for people who aren't familiar, it's over, can you describe
Ella?
Where it is?
It's on Ella. There isn't really a cross street there. It's kind of the foot of Ella, isn't it?
Yeah, and Ontario is the nearest big street.
And the reference that a lot of people in town know is the old caboose.
Yes, the Lions Club.
The Lions
it says
Club,
on it, the caboose.
The Lions Den and the caboose.
You look a little further, you see the museum. Excuse me.
And you guys are just to the kind of the south of the museum and the
east of it a little bit. You walk in from the parking lot past us. In fact, I think we get some visitors, especially out-of-town folks, who have come too early. The museum isn't open yet, and they look around and they think, what's this? So they take the little path over. And we love that because part of our mission is educating people about native plants. So any of the gardeners working there or our paid employee who's there from 9 to 12 each weekday will just stop working and take people through and introduce them to the native plants.
Mm-hmm. And the Arboretum is really quite a showcase for the for native plants and for the efforts of the Kinnikinick Native Plant Society. We're fortunate in that the ground before it became the Native Plant Arboretum already had quite a number and quite a diversity of native trees, very large native trees, so including the pines, the Douglas fir, cedar, hemlock, and all those things are already in there. So the Native Plant Society has built a lot of native plant gardens, a variety of habitats around that area, and it's really a good place to come and see the native plants and learn a little bit more about them.
And what each plant likes, where it flourishes, how you could use it in your garden, or just to notice it and pay more attention when you're out in the wilderness. You think, oh, that's ocean spray, which is about to bloom. Yesterday, we had a high school class there from 9 to 12, a horticulture class. And they had to, their assignment was to find certain plants and their habitats and try and get the Latin name. But part of the fun was they did know some of these plants because they'd seen them. They just didn't know what they were or know much about them. Hmm. So the educational function, which Lois had in mind as one of the main ones, is being well met, I think. We are requested by groups to give tours, and we gladly do so.
And the high school, Sandpoint High?
This one LPO? Was from Spirit Lake. They come every
Spirit
year.
Lake. Oh, because mm-hmm. I know Sandpoint High has a...
They do have a class.
Mm-hmm.
And we have had them come before.
I think LPO does too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They'd be most welcome.
Absolutely.
And that's very neat. And you said 9 to 12 weekdays. Somebody's usually there.
9 to 12 weekdays. Uh-huh. Starting June 1st, we have someone on site. And this year it's a she. The job of that person is to kind of oversee the gardeners, do anything. So those of us who volunteer there, we each have a habitat. I am the interior rainforest. Somebody else is the dry rock habitat. Somebody else is the interior moist forest. And there are three or four of us there each time. And we are just working away, weeding. The dandelions are the menace at the moment, but I think we've got them under control. And we might have some new plants to add, and we water. But our paid person is helping with that. But if anybody comes by with questions, she immediately goes off answering their questions and showing them around.
That'd be nice. I've never really taken... I mean, I've walked through there several times, but I've never... I've been there, but I've never been... Given the formal tour, I guess.
It's a serene place.
It sure is.
That's one of the reactions of one of the adults yesterday, and I was so pleased because that's the way I feel.
What do you think is the trophy piece? What are you proudest of?
Oh, my goodness.
In the either in the arboretum or in the interior.
She's going to offend somebody.
The interior rainforest?
It's not the trophy. Uh-huh. I don't know. The whole place is a testament to vision and dedication. I'm blown away by the group of people who started this back in, and it was actually Lois, the start of the Native Plant Society was a small notice that Lois Wythe tacked up at the library. It said, anyone else interested in starting a chapter of the North Idaho Plant Society, meet me here, and she gave a date. A week later, she hoped a few people would show up. 60 people showed up.
Wow.
That was the beginning of our organization. We're now 123 members. We have, people pay annually. We have meetings on the fourth Saturday of every month at the community hall. We have one this Saturday, for instance. And one of the biggest projects that we manage is the Arboretum. When I go there, I just look around and marvel at what has been accomplished by the people with vision. Because it was just all land, and the fairgrounds had been out there. That mm-hmm. was hard-packed, compacted land that had to be loosened up, and they had to plan. We have a little over an acre, 1.14 mm-hmm. something or other acre. So the trees were already there, but we had to supply the understory. That was the whole idea.
Gosh. So the plant sale, let's talk specifically about the plant sale. Is there a charge to attend the plant sale or?
No, it's all free, but we do charge for the plants.
Uh-huh.
And that's the source of the funds for the Native Plant Society, because it is a fundraiser for them primarily. So it's native plants, and if you talk to different people, you do get different definitions of what they mean by native. Since this is my nursery, Cedar Mountain Perennials, that is providing the plants for this sale, what we think of as native are plants that do grow in the wild, not hybrids, not improved species, but plants that grow just the way they do in the wild and are native to the... generally the western region, western U.S. Probably the majority of them are native right here in northern Idaho, but some of them come out a little further afield from the Great Basin, from the Rocky Mountains and the Plains states as well. But all are hardy. A lot of them are very drought tolerant, and a lot of them, one of the big advantages, of course, of putting native plants into your landscape is that they're... they take care of themselves very well. They already grow here. They don't need a lot of care. They don't need a lot of water. They don't
need
consume a lot of
fertilizer.
They don't consume a lot of resources too. So they're kind of a low maintenance and low impact way to do a very nice landscape.
So with the impact of global warming and climate change, do you as a expert on native plants see any change in what's going on in the plant world around us?
I think it's probably a little too early. Things are going to change, undoubtedly. But I think it's the changes are a little too subtle to see very much. Couple things we do see. One is that, and maybe this year is a particularly good example, but things do bloom earlier. We do warm up earlier in the spring. Shorter winters is typical of what you would expect from a global warming. So we're seeing that. And also we're seeing some insect problems on plants. Bark beetles in particular have been worse with both with the droughts and with milder winters. Bark beetles have spread into areas. Some bark beetles have spread into areas that they were not did not previously exist because they didn't survive the winter. Now that they've had milder, now that there are areas with milder winters, there's more bark beetle problems, more up in Canada than around here. But just sort of one other piece of evidence of how plants are affected by global warming.
So if I were to go shopping at the plant sale on the 4th,
please do.
Would there be somebody there to help me make a decision about what I would want to buy? For instance, would I come and say, you know, I have this area of my house. It's on the north exposure underneath a whole bunch of maple trees, and it's really shady. This is true in my house. Yeah. And so what do I put in there?
That's key. The key to having a low maintenance plant is putting it in the right habitat. So the right amount of sun, the right amount of moisture, right kind of soil conditions that match what it has in the wild so that you don't have to do a whole lot to it. So that's really an important part of
I think her question is, will someone help her?
Yes.
Yeah.
You make a choice.
And Bob is there and his wife, Jill, equally well-versed in all these plants. Plus, do you have two of our members usually?
Two or three
especially knowledgeable people.
This year, we're going to be getting some help from Molly O'Reilly, Gail Bolin, and Sylvia Chatburn. Also, all very knowledgeable on the native plants. And I should put in a plug for Sylvia Chatburn, since we've talked so much about...
Oh, please do. I didn't even give her last name.
Since we've talked so much about the Arboretum, Sylvia has really been the driving force, the continuity in the care
of... She dates back to Lois and the creation of the Arboretum.
Yeah. And she coordinates the Arboretum activities there and oversees the whole project from year to year to year. And she's done a wonderful job there. So
yes, there will be people who can help you because that's very important. Mm-hmm. You want to find the right plant for your site.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Lots of people have questions.
Yeah. The maple trees might be a problem, though.
Yes.
Maple trees are just about the hardest thing to grow anything under because they have such deep shade, heavy leaf drop, and heavy
incredible
surface roots.
It's
hard
shade.
To find something that actually competes in those conditions.
It is.
So I
have that, too.
So the maple trees might have to go.
I love the shade.
That's the problem.
Our plethora of Norwegian maples,
Yes,
I've got those. Uh-huh.
I cannot advocate cutting down trees as chair of the tree committee, so that would be a bad thing.
Hey, guys, let's take a quick musical break and take a trip back in time 50 years. Here's your musical trivia question. This is the first number one hit, I believe, on either side of the Atlantic that featured the sitar as a musical instrument.
Oh, really? Ravi Shankar.
Yes.
Who's the, or what is the song? I don't know if he played on this one.
Well, then it's a George Harrison.
It's a You're in the ballpark, but okay. it's Painted Black by the Rolling Stones.
Oh.
How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's that was at number one on this date in 1966, I believe, on the UK
My charts. Husband will be happy with this. He's a total Rolling Stones guy.
Oh, we should hang out sometime. Me too. Okay. The KRFY Morning Show is available as a free download at krfy.org. You can also stream Panhandle Community Radio live from the website and find program schedules and more information about the station. While browsing krfy.org, support the station by clicking the Donate button on the right side of your screen and help keep Panhandle Community Radio commercial-free and a growing community resource. And we're back. That was the Rolling Stones with Painted Black, which came from the album Aftermath, I believe, at least in the United States. Came out in 1966, and it was at number one on the UK charts on this date in 1966. It hit number one. It hit the Billboard number one on June 11th in just a couple weeks here. And held that position for 2 weeks. If you're curious, I didn't look up and see who played the sitar on that, but oh well. And we could tie that to trees, because don't you paint the bottoms of trunks sometimes to keep bugs out or something like that? Is that frowned upon?
Sometimes you paint them white to reflect the sun, to prevent sun scald.
You certainly wouldn't paint them black.
You would not. No. You would not paint them black. That would be bad. And in fact, a lot of people still use these paint tars, these pruning tars, which are bad. Mm-hmm. Actually have turned out to be not only not helpful, but bad for the tree. Mm-hmm. As that interferes with the healing process, the natural healing
really?
Process.
Oh, really?
So if
you had to cut a huge branch or something, you should not put black tarry
stuff
just
make
on it.
Just make a nice, clean, proper pruning cut, and the tree will take care of the rest.
Oh, and wow. Do not paint it black.
Do not paint it black. Do not paint it with tar or any of those wound paints are called.
Huh. This public service announcement brought to you by the Rolling Stones.
What a segue.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about what happens at your monthly Kinnickinnick Native Plant Society meetings. Is it just people gather for coffee, or is it an educational opportunity?
It is an educational opportunity. Well, all are welcome. Of course, it's free. We're at the community hall. We're there all year, except we skip July and August. We're not there. And in December, we have a potluck. Mm-hmm. So officially, it starts at 9:45. People start coming before that. We have a mingling and coffee time beforehand, but the meeting starts at 10. We have a short business meeting with announcements from various committee chairs and information about events coming along. And then we always have an educational speaker, and they have been booked months in advance. And we have it in today's B, as a matter of fact. Hmm. There is a long, our press release is out describing the Bureau of Land Management person who's coming for this month. So that part of the program usually takes about an hour, and there's always time afterwards for questioning, and there's even more time. We don't need to be out of there till noon, and often people stay behind and talk. It's social and friendly and comfortable, but definitely educational, and we have very well-informed members. Some of our speakers have said, my, this is an amazing audience. These were such good questions that they already knew more than the speaker anticipated. Some of the better known speakers, we've had Jack Nesbitt a couple of times, and he draws a huge crowd. He's wonderful. We had two ladies who came down and talked about Camas. They came down from British Columbia. So we have a program chair who's booking these people months in advance, and we actually have a budget and can pay an honorarium to a few of them. And we often share speakers with other local groups, maybe the Master Naturalists or the Friends of Scotchman Peaks, that kind of thing. So it's worth, and we always have the notice in the papers, both papers, ahead of time.
So, sustainability is a big
thing.
Absolutely. So sustaining membership. How do you recruit, encourage more people to join or participate, and what is your demographic? Are you any younger people coming into the program?
Not as many as we'd like. Okay. We need more people to fall in love with native plants. Recruiting. I don't think we probably are doing a great job of recruiting, to be honest. What I have found is that those of us who are drawn to native plants might say, well, I guess I'll check out a meeting. I wonder what that's about. We're a very friendly group. We really do welcome people. And we also get gardeners who kind of sidle in. You know, they may have been planting ornamentals and have an ordinary garden, but they get curious. Mm-hmm. Or one of us who loves such things says, come to this meeting. I think you'd really like it. And then they come to a few more, and then they wind up joining us. Mm-hmm. We have great longevity. I mean, people who have been members for years and years and years. But and so we grow slowly. We have our core group, and we add a few every year.
So if you're somebody who has ornamentals in their yard, like I do, but you decide, well, I want to maybe, you know, go to art. You like discriminated against because you've got ornamentals.
Oh, good heavens.
In your
no,
yard?
Most of us do. No, there's no requirement. Yeah. There's no inspection.
You don't have to be a purist.
Most people aren't.
It's far, far from being a purist kind of organization. Okay. It's very just practical, hands-on.
Okay.
Within a group this large, there's you know quite a diversity of people's interests.
Absolutely.
But it really does speak to the strength of the organization to see how large a group we have here in this small
for
community.
A small town,
small
it's
town,
amazing
small county.
Right.
It's really extraordinary. I think what they've done, and part of that I think is having programs in a number of different areas, not just focusing on like the rare and endangered plants, which is of interest to some people, and the conservation end was certainly very important. But they also have done a lot of educational things. I think one of the biggest draws for the Native Plant Society are the Saturday programs and the great lineup of speakers that we always get for that. We often get 40, 50, 60 people come to these presentations.
That would be an average, about 60.
Wow, that's really good attendance.
Yeah, it really is. It's been a great program for
Beats city council meeting.
And our people, different speaker.
Yeah, and our people volunteer. Like next month is Kathy Cousins coming back. She was there last June. Mm-hmm. Here she comes again about the Delta, the restoration at the Clark Fork Delta.
Sure.
And many of our folks have volunteered on that project. And so everybody's eager for the update. Mm-hmm. It was very interesting last year. And look how far they've come. I mean, it's just wonderful.
So I have a little Camas story and then a question about Camas. So a number of years ago when Dover Bay was being developed, my husband and I knew there was camas that grew out there. And so we went out, and he's very good at transplanting things. So he transplanted some camas. They're a bulb. You call it a bulb?
Yes.
He transplanted camas bulb into our backyard, and about three or four of them. And so we look like crazy when the bloom is going to happen. You know, there's the leaves there. It's going to be here pretty soon. And they just finished blooming in our yard.
Yes, they did.
So at the plant sale, will there be any camas available?
No, I have tried growing camas.
It's hard.
It is. I can get seeds to germinate, but some plants don't do well in containers. And I grow all my plants in containers, and I have not been able to keep any alive for more than a year. And the first year, the camas threw up not much more than a little tiny shoot. Mm-hmm. So it's not something I've been successful with.
I think it's in some garden catalogs, though.
Yeah,
you may be able to have some, and that's how I got them.
Yeah, I think some people do sell bulbs.
Oh,
so you could probably mail order them but it's not an easy one to grow the way I'm doing things.
It's a beautiful blue. Is that what you have?
Yes.
The blue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and over by Usk in that area in the springtime, you see the fields just flush with it.
Oh,
yeah.
Really? Yeah. I haven't seen that. That'd be beautiful.
Yeah,
I love
very
blue.
Pretty. It's very pretty.
But just if I could elaborate a little bit more on the Kinnick Native Plant Society, another area that's been very active is their landscaping group.
Oh.
And of course, we have we do a couple things. We do landscape consultations for members, and that's every month through the spring and summer. a group of us will get together and visit one person's property, and we'll talk about their landscaping goals and what they need, and then make some recommendations for them so that they can move ahead with their own native plant landscaping.
Oh, that's totally
neat.
Talk
about the book.
The book, and the book is the other major effort that we put out a few years ago, landscaping with native plants in the Idaho Panhandle. And we had a group of about 10 folks, and we put that book together. It took a little over a year, I think, to get it put together and published. And we sold out of the first issue, and then first edition.
Reprinted.
And then we redid it. We cleaned up the index.
That's what you did.
And we added some sections, some text sections, and added another 20 or so plants to it. But it's a nice little landscaping guide for native plants. So people can have some information as to what kind of conditions they need to grow in, and also nice photos and what they look like.
Color photos.
Yeah, color photos. So,
and many of them are in the Arboretum, and it tells you what habitat in the Arboretum. You'll find it. You can go look at it.
Yeah.
It's a very important. So we sold out of the second printing, and then we did a third printing.
Where do you sell those?
We sell them through Vanderford's,
Corner Bookstore,
and I think
Museum.
All Seasons has them. Yeah, the Museum, and probably a couple places I'm neglectful.
Well Red Moose, I know, and others in Coeur d'Alene.
Yeah, and Hastings has had them.
I should think so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is it a publication the quality of like the City Tree booklet that was done?
Oh, yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes. That's a beautiful.
It's a couple hundred page book.
It's hefty. I should have brought it.
So, yeah. but it's a very useful guide.
Well, that consultation service is really neat, because that would be so helpful for somebody who, like we're talking about, maybe wants to get into, you know, trying that or adding that to their landscape plan but is like clueless about how to do it. So.
Sometimes it's a homeowner with nothing in the yard, or almost nothing, and it might be new to North Idaho, so really needs help knowing about our planting, the zone, et cetera, which seems to be fluctuating with our warmer. It's warmer now than when I moved here. But yes, there are a variety. And last year, Southside School, they have a nature trail, and they wanted a landscaping consultation. Aside from that, it's been homeowners mostly.
And then there'd be some knowledge of soil types around here too, which can be multiple on one lot in the city. You know, you can go from it's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all the clays and.
How do you get in touch with the landscaping committee if you are curious about that?
You do need to be a member.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you would have to be a member.
Pretty easy. Our dues are low. Mm-hmm. It's Dennis Rieger is the person in charge. And they are booked in advance, and I don't know where we are for this year. Here it is May. I'm sure he already has some lined up.
Yeah. So the easy entree would be to come to one of the monthly meetings.
See what you think. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think some people come actually for the reason they know they need help and they want to learn more. And maybe this group is where they're going to find the help. And they almost always stay because they do find it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Lots of people are eager to help.
Hmm. Ray, have you seen, is there anything new or changing about the Plant Society, or is it pretty much the same as it ever was?
We're going,
or the Arboretum.
We're steady.
Too,
you know. We're a pretty steady group.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a retired librarian from Seattle Public, and we have friends of the library, just as we do here. And we had friends in my library branch. And sometimes people would show up and sometimes not. What knocks me out about KNPS is that not only does everyone who said, I'll be there and help, not only does everyone show up, extra people come. There is a level of initiative and sharing and just joy in what we're doing that pleases me. And that's been consistent. I don't know about a particular
change.
What do you think?
We don't have any new programs or projects coming up. We're just that kind of...
Aside from the mural, many of us are really excited about this mural.
Right.
So we'll see what we'll do for our 20th anniversary. I'm thinking a little about, wouldn't it be fun to have a native garden plant tour or something we haven't done before. We will celebrate a 20th anniversary because...
Mm-hmm. You mean like through the community?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Whoops.
Mm-hmm. Just thought
which is coming up when?
Next year, 2017. It's not that far away.
No. Bob, let's talk a little bit about the tree committee, which you are also a part of. And Ray might have questions about that, too. Feel free to jump in.
Yeah, the Sandpoint Tree Committee, I'm currently the chair of that. It's a citizens advisory committee, which helps the city forester plan policy and programs for their to manage the city trees. One of the most important things we try to do is continually try to find places to put new trees. And the city has a program called Neighborwoods. And in that program, if you want to have a tree in the right-of-way, city right-of-way in front of your property, the city will buy the tree and will plant the tree. In exchange, the property owner is required to attend a tree care workshop to learn how to take care of that tree. And they have to sort of agree to keep it watered and keep it tended for the next several years. So it's a good deal for both the city, I think, in that we're getting more trees planted for the property owners as well. So that's something we try to do every year. Applications are available at City Hall, and you can pick them up anytime or get them online from the City of Sandpoint website and send them in. But once a year, and we've been kind of moving the workshop date around a little bit, so I can't tell you exactly when the next one is going to be, but when the next workshop comes up, we'll contact everyone that's put in an application for trees and have everyone meet at the workshop, and we'll explain the program and tell you how to take care of the trees once they get planted.
And the Neighborwoods program has planted like close to 500 trees in the city during its existence?
Probably somewhere in that, several hundred for sure. Yeah. I kind of have lost track myself of exactly.
Well, this year, how many were planted this spring?
I think 50 or 60 were planted this year, and that's probably pretty typical for most years. The first year we did this, we had a really big turnout, and I think we planted probably closer to 100 trees that year, 80 to 100 trees. So, but since then, it's been 50, 60 trees is more typical.
And in spring and in fall?
I was going to say mine was in the fall.
Well, we started doing a spring and fall, and then we moved it to just fall only. We're having some troubles with the logistics with getting trees in the spring, and then so we moved it to fall. But then last fall, because it had been so dry, nobody was digging any trees, so there were no trees available, so we had to move it back to the spring for planting. So we're still kind of juggling to try to find the best timing on all of this. It's been kind of a challenge for us to figure out when we want to have the workshop and when we want to do spring or fall planting.
Right.
But a lot of it depends on when can we actually get the tree. So we need to work with the nurseries and work out those details a little more.
And when we're saying city trees, we're not talking about trees that in total exist within the city. We're talking about trees that are in the public space. So either on the street right-of-ways or in the parks.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the city doesn't have any control or interest in private property trees.
Yes. Right now we don't have any control. If a tree is strictly on private property, we have no say over what that person does with the tree. If they prune it, they take it down. That's their tree to do with as they wish. So one thing we are considering right now at the tree committee is we're considering a heritage tree program, which is a way to kind of honor the larger trees, the older trees, maybe some of the more unusual trees like the tulip tree, and try to bring them into a heritage program, which will give them a little bit more recognition let that be known to the public so that the public can know about these very special trees that are in our community.
Mm-hmm. And seek them out.
Yeah.
Oh,
so we'll probably,
good.
Yeah, we'll be putting you know, putting a map together with the trees on it.
Good.
Maybe perhaps like a walking tour type of map.
Next year?
It'll probably be a couple of years before this is all up and running. It's kind of a slow process.
Yes.
Are there tree watchers like there are bird watchers? I mean, you wouldn't be watching it. You'd be looking at it, I guess. You wouldn't really be seeing it doing anything. But are there people who make a point of going and finding unusual trees or anything like that? Is that a hobby? It certainly should be.
interesting question.
Maybe we should start it. I have not heard of that.
No,
I don't know
it's
if anyone else
club.
Has heard of that. Idaho, well, there's like a federal register of big trees, and the tree is measured in height, trunk diameter, and canopy spread, and there's sort of a formula that they use to generate whichever tree of each species gets the biggest number. Mm. And then within each state, Idaho has a big tree program, so each species has a big tree named gets the biggest score on this calculation. We do have one in Bonner County here on Gooby Road. The Gooby's property have the biggest cottonwood in the state, and I don't know how big it is, but the trunk looks like it's 6 feet or more across. Mm-hmm. It's really a massive, massive tree.
You should really go and look at it before something happens to
I'm
it.
Going.
The cottonwoods are
just over the railroad tracks on Gooby. Uh-huh. It's like the first house on the right.
It's on the right hand side. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's not very far out there. So that's one of the outstanding trees of our community.
First time a tree watcher must have found it.
Yeah.
Or else he nominated it. I don't know the process.
Yeah.
Speaking of paying attention.
The first time I met Bob, I was at my home and I see this man walking down the street with a clipboard and looking up, you know, and I'm going, what the heck is he doing? And he went out and he was on the side of my house where my maple, house where the maple trees are. So I went out and said, hi, excuse me, what are you doing? He says, oh, I'm Bob Wilson from the tree committee, and I'm doing an inventory of city trees. So tell us about the inventory process.
Yeah, we maintain an inventory of the trees that fall in the city right-of-way. And I've been doing that for 5 or 6 years now. But the city keeps an eye on them keeps track of what is where and what's doing well and what's not doing well. And in particular, trees that are starting to develop any rot or cracks or defects that could be a real hazard. We want to know those right away and identify them for removal because trees do get old and trees do need to be removed, unfortunately. But as part of the inventory, we also are tracking where are good opportunities for putting new trees. So we're trying to keep the cycle going with older trees being lost and newer trees being planted.
So what's the current philosophy about whether you should, when planting like a large area, whether you should alternate species or have the same kind of species and multiple plantings? I think there's a conflicting philosophy about that.
Well, I think it's mostly a matter of personal preference.
Okay.
I don't know if there's any valid reason to do one or the other. Perhaps if you had a huge planting of one kind of species, and Sandpoint has, I think, something like 40% of the street trees are maples. So that's kind of heavily balanced towards maples. They do well, but the risk of having a lot of the same kind of tree is that if something comes in that attacks that tree, then they're all at risk and you could lose a lot of trees in a short period of time. So that would be the risk. But if you're just on a single property or a single street, I don't know if that makes that much
Doesn't
difference.
Really matter.
It's sort of a matter of personal preference. What kind of look are you trying to develop? And some people like that uniform look, to look down a street and see a row of nice trees all the same. Mm-hmm. And some people like the real mix. So it's just personal preference, I think, for the most part.
With the planting of the neighborhood trees, is there a follow-up like observation process to see what kind of trees are really doing well and which aren't? For instance, there's some that that I don't think were particularly good options to have for people. I don't know the name of them.
Yeah. We don't have a formal program. We do catch some of that with the street tree inventory, because I note those and note whether they're doing well. And there's definitely been a couple of species that I don't recommend that we plant any more of, because I don't see them doing well. But not any formal follow-up. But we do all, you know, if the property owner is having any troubles, they can always contact the city forester for assistance, and we can come and see what's going on and see what might be the problem.
And the city forester is Jared Yost by name, and
yes,
he works
right
up in the Public Works Department. If somebody wanted to access him for city tree related issues in the neighborhood and that kind of thing.
Yeah, he would be the first contact, the primary contact for any tree related issues. And I might mention, if you do have a tree that's out in the right of way, you do need to get permission. If you think you need to get rid of it, or if it's a hazard, contact the city forester before you do anything, please.
Right.
The city forester, which is sort of a contradiction in terms, I think.
No.
I don't know. I mean, obviously
he
not.
He thinks the forest isn't not in the city. I think that's where he's headed.
It sounds like a oxymoron to me, a little bit. But,
no, because they're urban forests.
No, it
it's
sure
urban
is.
Urban forest. It's a big deal.
It's nice to be introduced to the idea. Wait a minute, a forest in town? How could that be? Add more trees.
If you look at aerial photos, you'll see how much of the tree is covered by trees.
Yeah.
So it is like a forest with buildings and houses in it.
And besides, you know, the attractiveness and the relationship to oxygen production and that kind of thing, there's a real benefit to street trees in terms of stormwater management and in terms of pavement life, because you provide shade and it doesn't deteriorate with the. So there's all kinds of arguments for a real robust street tree program.
It's a softening effect on the city.
There's also a traffic calming element to trees.
It's just calming, period, I think.
I think
it's one of the loveliest features of our town.
And if you hit them, you won't run into a house. Stop by your car if you're on.
You can notice, I mean, just going, I ride my bike a lot, and if you go driving down or going down Fifth Avenue versus Sixth Avenue, there's a major change in temperature. It's a lot more comfortable.
Right. Yeah,
sure.
On Sixth.
Next week, by the way, Ken Thacker.
We know Ken.
Yeah, I imagine you do. Ken Thacker is coming in on Tuesday to talk about the Lightning Creek Treasured
Landscape
Weed Project. Not treasured weeds, but treasured landscape.
Treasured landscape.
Yes. And that's next Tuesday. So that's one more thing that you guys are involved in, but that's an ongoing project as well.
So why don't you tell us real quickly again, because we're almost out of time, the date and the scope of the event.
Sure. Saturday, June 4, 9 to 1. At the Arboretum, which is right next to the History Museum on Ella. It includes a proclamation from the mayor and a brief ceremony, and then a wonderful sale of native plants, a bake sale, and a chance to stroll around the Arboretum and even get guided tours if you'd like. It's an annual fundraiser for us, and some people look forward all year knowing they can get native plants at Arbor Day.
Very nice.
All right. Yeah. Well, Bob Wilson and Ray Charlton, thank you both very much for coming in this morning.
It's been a pleasure.
You're welcome.
We are almost out of time, as you mentioned. I'll let you know that you can go to Sandpoint Online to see what's coming up in the in our calendar of events for the weekend. It is a pretty busy weekend, being Memorial Day. I don't think we have time to read all these right now.
There's
plays going on. Those folks we interviewed last week have a play this evening, and it might not be. I know Tuesday's show was sold out.
Oh, good.
And,
that was the dinner theater at the Panada.
Oh, good. Yeah. The new offering, the dinner theater. Oh, good.
You might, if you want to get tickets for that, it might be too late, but I would suggest calling this morning, immediately call to Panada and find out if you can get tickets.
And maybe
for that,
a little heads up about the annual membership drive.
Now we're talking. Yeah.
For KRFY.
June 10th and 11th. Coming up in not this weekend, not the following weekend, but the one after that. Right after our event.
Mm-hmm.
Right after your event, we'll be having, we are live on the air for 2 days, the Friday and Saturday, June 10th and 11th. We are moving downstairs from our secluded studio up here on the top floor of the downtown, whatever this building is called.
Front building, I think I read.
Oh, okay. Absolutely. Well, that's where we are now. We're moving down into the storefront, the Crosby Building, which is on the corner of First and Cedar, looking right down First Avenue.
Wow.
And we'll be down there with balloons, live music. It's 16 live bands, I think, at last count.
Wow. This is quite the event.
Yeah. And anyone is welcome to come down and just hang out.
Come on down.
Meet the people who are involved in the radio station. And also, if you can't come on down, give us a call at 265-2992. You can become a member of the radio station, and we appreciate all the support we have. There's other points to mention about that, too. For example, a gift drawing throughout the drive, multiple gifts. We've been planning up to last night what the gift drawings are going to be. I think, I don't want to say anything definite right now, but I think people will be very pleased. Coming up next week, as I said, Ken Thacker is coming in and Britta Meyerly from Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness to talk about the Lightning Creek Treasured Landscape Weed Project. I think I got that right. Mm-hmm. And that's, and then on Wednesday, join morning show host Chris Bessler and Susie Prez with Superintendent Sean Woodward and Steve Youngdahl from the Lake Pendere School District to talk about the end of the school year. And this is another one that might interest you guys, the plant facility levy.
It's not a different plant.
Let's
be generous.
It's a different one.
Not a native plant.
Yeah.
Not a good cause.
Very much a non-native plant, I guess. But that's at 8 o'clock on 88.5 KRFY next week. Tune in. We are fresh out of time. Stay tuned for Bird Note and then Otto's Eclectic Mix all day long right here on KRFY, Panhandle Community Radio.